said that we are prepared to change our approach to Russia if Russia changes course. And yet Russia was the solution. For the very war that America caused, that cost 3,000 lives. Yes, Glenn, go ahead.
You know, America's responses to Russia have been incongruous at numerous times in history. During the Civil War, the Russians stationed their naval vessels off both our east and west coasts to help prevent meddling by the British. And decades later, in order to express our gratitude to them, Woodrow Wilson, at the behest of Edward Mandel House, provided a special passport for Leon Trotsky when the Canadians detained them when they were on their way over to foment the Bolshevik Revolution. Thank you, Russia. Here's a revolution for you. Thank you for your support.
Oh, yeah. And so much of that revolution was fermented in the United States. And then after the revolution, the support came largely from the United States. And, you know, it was not a popular revolution. Less than 3% of the Russians were communists. They brutally imposed their will on a country, and which led to the deaths of some 40 to 45 million Russians. As and you're right, you know, they helped the North. Now I don't even know if you could say they helped the North. They helped probably North and the South by keeping the British from capitalizing on America's war. And yet, when they were in a situation, we aided and abetted the other side in Russia's civil war.
It's almost like you have to speak of two Russias in the sense of cultural Russia versus communist, modern Bolshevik era communist Russia, because I see Putin as sort of an expression of, you know, the idea of Russian cultural national sovereignty as opposed to an exponent of communism trying to, you know, they accuse him of wanting to reestablish the Soviet Union and take over the world. I don't see that at all. I see this as a guy who identifies with his nation and is trying to maintain, you know, their culture and their sovereignty.
Right. No, I do as well. I'm not a fan of Putin, but I would still say that Putin is among the handful of best leaders in the world today, that he is a nationalist, not a globalist, and that his decisions have served the interest of the world, even though his objective was to serve the interest of his people. And I think that the way that Putin has behaved in the Ukraine has been laudable, and that the way America has behaved there has been reprehensible.
And may Yahweh forbid that he should be displaced, because if he were gone, Medvedev, the little puppet lapdog, we would see that all of that lost.
Just think about what you just said, though. Like, because you just said that Putin's one of the best leaders in the world, and he's an absolutely despicable person. He's done horrible things.
I wouldn't go that far. I'd say that he has some. The West has tried to demonize him by saying that, you know, he has some peculiar tendencies. Like he likes to hunt and he likes to fish, and so he's shown bare-chested hunting and fishing, and that must be a bad guy. He's a little bit of a risk taker. He scuba dives up to Great Dusty Flash Jets.
I understand all that, but I'm saying that I do not believe that Putin is a good person. You will not convince me that he's a good person. I agree that he cares absolutely about Russia.
There aren't any good people that are world leaders, but if I were to say that if Putin had a vulnerability, it would be his allegiance with the oligarchs. The oligarchs who he both imprisons and holds accountable, and who he liberates for political purposes. He plays the oligarchs. He's certainly unified with the oligarchs, but it is a fascist oligarchy that exists in Russia now, and the oligarchs are the source of power, and Putin is in league with them, and therefore there are some aspects of his governance that are reprehensible because of the reprehensible nature of the Russian oligarchs. So I'd say that is his Achilles heel, but he was the patron saint of Syria, keeping the world out of world war when he came up with the plan there to resolve the chemical weapons dispute. He was correct when he warned against America invading Afghanistan and Iraq. He was correct when he warned the West about bombing Libya. He has been the most sane voice in the world now for a prolonged period of time. Now, he was not exactly a saint when it came to the movement in Georgia towards a greater independence. Although Georgia is independent, Georgia wanted to seek greater revenues from and control over oil and gas pipelines that the Russians maintained and built and deployed. And the Russians says, "Nah, you're not going to do that." And America, you know, threw a tizzy fit when over that episode. So I mean, there's some issues with his
character. Yeah, but when they turn around, they machine gunned the Russian troops, though. He wasn't going to sit still for that.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a good scene. But if you look at the amount of carnage resulting from and the loss of freedoms resulting from the Russian assertion of its control over those oil and gas pipelines and the Georgian Republic, it was extraordinarily minimal. If you compare that to the destruction of entire countries and infrastructure and the loss of hundreds of thousands of lives with America's invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, or the destruction of Libya, I mean, you're not even within the realm of a thousandfold.
Yeah, he repelled an attack. He used helicopters and ground troops and made short order, made it a matter of military conquest of short order. You know, in that case, it was lesser evil. One thing about Putin and Eastern Ukraine. Now, he's panned by some for having said at least three times in the media that he was not going to permit them to be attacked. And Lavrov also said it once, but then he never did intervene militarily to protect them. So some have actually panned him for that, but I suspect it was the oligarchs that held him back from acting militarily in Eastern Ukraine.
Yes. It could well be. I mean, the oligarchs control many factories in the eastern Ukraine, and Putin did not act in the eastern Ukraine. And he would have been moral to act in defense of Russians there, but he did not act, and he's the peacemaker. It is the Russian-Putin plan that brought peace and independence, really, to the eastern Ukraine. I want to share another paragraph of this story, and then we have Larry also with us, Glenn. It says, this speaks to a central question of our global age against globalism, New World Order. This is precisely what the character known as the Antichrist, the Torahless one, is going to promote. It is transparent. This is a New World Order with everyone subject to the new covenant of that new world order, the global age. Whether we will solve our problems together, you see, as one, in a spirit of mutual interest and mutual respect. Now, this is a man that is disparaging most everyone around the world. I mean, he's even disparaging our allies. Or whether we will descend into destructive rivalries as in the past. Destructive rivalries. I mean, the destructive rivalry right now is between Russia and the United States, perpetrated by the United States, between the United States and China, perpetrated by the United States, and between the United States and the Islamic world, perpetrated by the United States. When nations find common ground, not simply based on power, but on principle, then we can make enormous progress. But all of America's influence in the world today is on power, and on the projection of that power. It's why I say that America would be vastly safer, vastly more secure if we didn't have a military. Because by having a military, we're projecting our military on the world and destroying the world in the process. Now, he immediately transitions to Ebola, but before we do that, Larry, I'd love to have your insights here.
Well, I think what we're seeing here is just more consolidation of power, and they're being
yes.
more and more out front about it.
Yes.
You know, and this is a moment in time that if all the people said humanity could get together and stop all this, they'd have to do it. And we're not going to see that happen. Because we live in a world where if history proves nothing else, might is right. And that's it.
And that's what we're going to see, though, Larry, is we are going to see an integration of governments. We are going to see
a new world order. That's what Yahweh said. There'd be a one-world government.
Exactly. I mean, it is true that what Obama is proposing is precisely what God said would happen. The difference is that God speaks of it as being a hellish time for humanity, where man perpetrates great inhumane acts against his fellow man, and that it is... that this very thing that Obama is proposing is the very thing Yahweh said, that if he did not return and end this, that all life would be extinguished from the planet. That's how destructive what Obama is proposing is. You know, Obama is going to speak of ending secular strife. Sectarian strife, religious strife. And he's proposing to do that through religious or through political means, through integration of politics worldwide. And he will actually in this talk about that Christianity also had its wars. So I Googled this morning Christian on Christian wars. And I spent an hour this morning trying to find evidence of Christian-on-Christian wars. Because the president says, you know, I know Islam is fighting itself now, but it's just like Christians for centuries were fighting each other. I Googled. I searched. I did everything I could do to find evidence of Christian-on-Christian war. And there are some skirmishes. The Catholic Church fought the Anabaptists for a while. And there's what's called the 30 Years' War. But the 30 Years' War, which was fought in Germany... and it was labeled Lutherans against Catholics. That wasn't it at all. The purpose of the war was which royal clan was going to prevail and control the seat of government. So it was a fight between warlords. Religion really had nothing to do with it, and it was for 30 years isolated in Germany. I'm going to share with you how many wars Christianity has perpetrated after the break. In this speech, I'm just really getting ahead of myself a bit, but the context of our discussion is moving in that direction. The president will try to minimize the association between war and Islam. And you know, the reality is today that war and Islam are almost synonymous. Islam has a complete monopoly on terrorism and a near monopoly on war. And he'll try to say, oh, well, Christianity had its wars too, centuries of war. Not true. You'll find lots of mention of the Crusades, but the Crusades, even though they were wrongly inspired, they were wrongly perpetrated, the fact of the matter is that the Crusades were a direct response to Islamic aggression. Had the Crusades not taken place, Islam would have remained in control of huge swaths of the world and would have conquered Europe. And so the only reason that humanity had the sciences and the great explosion of advancements in technology and research and prosperity is because of the Crusades. Had they not occurred, Islam would have suffocated all the life out of this planet. And that wasn't Christian on Christian. It wasn't inspired by Christians. It was inspired by the Muslims. So there just isn't. I mean, it's just the fact is that there haven't been centuries of Christian on Christian wars. It's just not true. The one thing I was going to share with you, and we'll get back to it at a later time, Christianity is responsible for 3% of the world's wars. none of which were significant in terms of their carnage. Islam is responsible for, prior to this, the last spat of wars, was responsible for about 6% of the world's wars. Now, apart from them, and actually I should say, religion apart from Islam is responsible for 3% of the world's wars. Christianity, about half of that. So 1.5%. Now, you will read in socialist, secular humanist periodicals and listen to speeches of secular humanists like Obama, and they will infer that religion has been the source of the world's wars. But the fact of the matter is just the opposite. Apart from Islam, 97% of the world's wars have been non-religious in origin. So 97% are politically inspired, not religiously inspired. And so when you try to elevate politics and militaries, you're in a vastly more lethal construct with far more lethal consequences than when you're dealing with religiously inspired wars. Religiously inspired wars, apart from Islam, represent 3% of humanity's conflicts. Yes, you have been lied to. You've been told so often that religion is the source of all wars that people believe it. And it's the antithesis of what's true. But it's a great example here for all of you who are listening to this, who have heard it drummed into you that religion is the cause of all wars, and that, you know, Christianity has been a warmongering religion, and it, that, you know, Christianity has started most wars and all of that sort of rot. That you've had that drummed into you, it's become a maxim throughout your education. So the fact is, the opposite is true. Christianity has been responsible for less than 2% of humankind's wars. Religions other than Islam have been responsible for 3% collectively, which means that apart from Islam, 97% of man's wars are non-religious in nature. They're political in nature. Sobering. Now, the president says, as we speak,
surprising at all. I mean, you have men fighting over power.
Correct.
This is going on for years.
Right.
And the more consolidation you get of power, it seems more vicious they get. I think to climb up to the top of that pyramid, you just have to be one brutal SOB. That's what I think.
That's the reason I'm going over this speech, is that the integration of political power and the imposition of a new covenant for a new world order is the single most lethal, destructive, devastating thing that humankind can possibly endure. And that is the purpose of this speech. That's the reality of it. Integration of power is what has caused 97% of the wars and 99% of the deaths of people over human history. And it has never been worse than it has been in the last 100 years with the advent of socialist secular humanism, communism, and fascism, and these political schemes of man, of central power, of control, of integration of all things, particularly withstanding militaries, that the world has been ravaged. The Abominator now takes credit and says America is pursuing a diplomatic resolution to the Iranian nuclear issue as part of our commitment to stop the spread of nuclear weapons and to pursue the peace and security of the world without them. We can reach a solution that meets Iran's energy needs without, while assuring the world that your program is peaceful. No, we can't. There is a zero correlation between energy needs and Iran's nuclear program. None. We're not trying to assure that they make their energy needs. They float on an ocean of oil and gas. They have no energy needs. Even to put it in those terms, says that the President of the United States has capitulated to the Iranians. And all he's done thus far is given the Iranians everything they've asked for. and allow them to continue with their program unabated. Nothing has been rolled back. The Iranians will soon have a nuclear bomb, and the man that paved the road for that is the President of the United States. And that nuclear, their nuclear arsenal will not be used in Israel. It's going to be used in America. They're not going to launch it on international ballistic missiles, although they have the capacity to do that. They're going to deploy them on ships that they will sail into America's harbors. And when this happens, America, I'm not going to be here. But I will tell you that you ought to hearken back to this warning. It will have occurred because of the blunder of negotiating and diplomacy by the U.S. government led by Barack Hussein Obama. He then says that America is and will continue to be a Pacific power. What he means is military power. He has positioned the U.S. military against China. He has been deliberate, blatant, and blunt about doing so. And now he says that America's military power is promoting peace. What a myth that militaries promote peace. Militaries destroy. They kill. But we will insist that all nations abide by the rules of the road and resolve their territorial disputes consistent with international law. Again, globalization. America is committed to a development agenda that eradicates extreme poverty by 2030. Then how in the world are you going to eradicate poverty? Has there been any time when the world hasn't had people who are impoverished?
No.
No. Will there ever be a time? No. As a matter of fact, by 2030, the entire world will be at war. In 2030, this planet will be as hellish as you can, probably more hellish than we can even imagine. To help people feed themselves, to power their economies, and to care for their sick, we will do our part. Well, the fact is, we can't power our economy. We are no longer able to care for our own sick. We were once the breadbasket of the world. But even in that, we're failing. We can't do it ourselves. How are we going to do it for the rest of the world? It's not our responsibility, and it can't be done. America is pursuing ambitious reductions of our carbon emissions, and we have increased our investments in clean energy. We have not invested in clean energy. As a matter of fact, we have divested from clean energy. We have as a nation. We are deploying fewer air turbines. We are no longer dealing with the geothermal. We're out of it. We are dismantling dams for hydroelectric. We are not building the infrastructure to transport natural gas, which is one of our great resources. And that there are no longer any tax incentives to develop solar, and so it's being sidelined.
Well, and you mentioned something there. We can't feed ourselves. The reason that we can't feed ourselves is due to big government. I mean, we're right back to that. I mean, it's not just taxation, it's overregulation.
Right. There are more employees in the Department of Agriculture than there are farmers in America.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I see, this is just insane.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, America's insane. And America pays farmers not to grow crops.
Yeah, and the non-pig farm and the non-corn farm.
Right, and on top of that, we now have 75 million Americans on food stamps. 75 million Americans on, and they don't even have food stamps anymore. They give you a nice credit card. Now, this is the government that who's providing something in the range of $10 billion worth of refunds each year. Fraudulent. You know, it can't collect its taxes anymore. It's turned the burden of collecting taxes over to business. And then when people file for refunds, the majority of that money now is going not to the filer, but somebody who's simply stolen their Social Security number. And the IRS is incompetent in resolving the problem. The country is completely screwed. One side, up one side, down the other. Everything that we are doing internally is a disaster now. And yet, and like, for example, our infrastructure to maintain the ability to be productive, we've let it go. Whether it be the sewer systems, the road systems, our bridge systems, our internal waterways that are filling with silt, our electric grid, no matter what it is, we're very quickly becoming a third world country relative to our infrastructure. Speaking of the rules of the road. On issue after issue, he says, and now we're getting back to the new covenant for the new world order. On issue after issue, we cannot rely on a rule book written for a different century. Let's discard the Torah. Let's discard the rule books. We need to have a New Testament. That's what he's advocating here. This is exactly what the Antichrist, the Torahless one, will advocate. He says we can't rely on that old rule book. We need a different rule book for a different century. If we lift our eyes beyond our borders, globalization, new world order, no longer borders between nations, all one. If we think globally and act cooperatively, this is the antithesis of what the founding fathers of this country promoted. This is the very thing that leads to the predicted result of the tribulation, where mankind is annihilating mankind. Thinking globally, acting, cooperative as nations. We can shape the course of this century as our predecessors shaped the post-World War II age. That's what he wants to do.
Oh, they did fine, didn't they?
Oh, yeah,
they did
imagine that.
Fine job. Matter of fact, they even set Mao up.
Oh, yeah, you look at
beautiful.
The way they
it's
shaped
lovely.
It. You had, between Stalin and Mao, you have 75 million people annihilated. 75 million people just between those two goons that were, fashioned out of World War II. How could he be? I mean, how can a person make this statement and the world, particularly in America, just not rise up and say, "You idiot, you know, go away. We disown you." You know, is 75 million people annihilated by what was, created in the post-World War II era, where Europe was worse off than it was when we started that war, enslaved by a communist regime. China enslaved by a communist regime, all as a result of the post-World War II era. Wow. I mean, this man is completely rewriting history to create the impression that globalization is a good thing. But as we look to the future, one issue risks a cycle of conflict that could derail such progress. I guess he wants to have this century kill more than 100 million people. Maybe we can derail that progress and really kill a lot of people. And that cancer is, what is his favorite cancer? What is he most opposed to? Extremism. That cancer is
freedom.
Extremism.
Freedom. Just put insert freedom when you hear extremism.
Extremism that has ravaged part of the Muslim world. Now, he's not saying that the extremism is a result of Islam. He's not saying that Islam is the source of this extremism and this foe. He's saying that extremism has ravaged the Islamic world. Which means he says that extremism is opposed to Islam, as opposed to extremism is the essence of Islam. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's imperative to remember that the globalist definition of peace is the absence of dissent.
Correct.
They speak against intolerance, yet their institutions maintain zero tolerance policies toward anything that could be construed as dissent. And that's why they love Islam, because it means submission. They may not love the religion, but they love submission.
Correct. You know, the Quran says those who fear will obey. You know, impose tyrannies, make the people fear. The Quran says that Muslims have no choice in the matter of religion. They have no choice in the matter of their government that Allah has chosen for them. It's submit. It is surrender, which is what Islam means, and obey.
By the way, I think Paul said that too.
Yes, he did.
Of course, Yahweh said different. He said, in Hosea, he said that you've gotten kings, you've gotten princes. I didn't know them.
Right.
You did all this yourself. And then Paul and Islam, I guess, they say, well, God puts political people in power.
Oh, yeah. 13th chapter of Paul's letter on behalf of Rome says that that you must submit to your government. You must obey your government. He claims that God established the government. Now, this is the very government, by the way, that within a matter of years would declare war on the chosen people, that would destroy his temple, that would come back and finish the job and annihilate most every Jew on the planet, starving them, crucifying them, torturing them, and enslaving them. And that's the very government that Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, the world's ultimate scumbag, ordered people to submit to in his letter to the Romans.
Let's try this one out. This is Hosea,
yeah.
8:4. They have set up kings, but not by me. They made princes. I didn't know them. Of their silver and gold, they made them idols. They're going to be cut off.
Right.
Now, Paul, let every being be in subjection to the government authorities, because there is no authority except for God, and the authorities that exist were appointed by God. Wow, God said otherwise. Wow.
Exactly the opposite, yeah. I mean, for someone to be a Pauline Christian, to hold up a New Testament, half of which was written by Paul, and claim that's the Word of God, you have to be an absolute idiot. Shame on you. So rather than saying that violent extremism, this foe, which is an errant term for it, the violence of Islam is fundamental to the religion. And it's the most fundamentalist Muslims, the best Muslims, that are the most violent. So not only is he using the wrong term, he's actually positioning his violent extremism as the foe of the Muslim world as opposed to the product of the Muslim world. That's what he said here. But as we look to the future, one issue risks a cycle of conflict that could derail such progress, and that is the cancer of violent extremism that has ravaged so many parts of the Muslim world. So rather than positioning Islamic jihadism as a product of Islam, as a consequence of Islam, he's positioning it as the foe of Islam, the antithesis of what's true. Then he says, of course, terrorism is not new. Now, that's true. The United States was a terrorist country. That's how we prevailed in many of our wars, including the Civil War, including World War II, by perpetrating terrorist acts. Terrorism isn't new. But what he should be saying is not that terrorism isn't new, is that the correlation between terrorist acts today and Islam is monopolistic. 99.9% of the terrorist acts perpetrated on humanity today are perpetrated by Islamic jihadists. Now, that is the relevant statement here. Rather than saying that terrorism is not new, the only relevant thing to say at this point leads to the opposite conclusion, so he doesn't want to say it, which is that Islam has an absolute monopoly on terror. Then, he says, but in this century we have faced a more lethal and ideological brand of terrorists who have perverted one of the world's great religions. This is the statement that came out of Giuliani and right after 9/11. Where he said that Muslims had hijacked their religion.
No, so those were Muslims that follow their religion. When a Muslim goes out and they behead an infidel, and that's anybody that's not their particular brand of Islam, or not doing what they say, not submitting to them, they're doing exactly what Muhammad said to do, word for word.
I could devote 3 hours, the full 3 hours of this show, for a month, every program for 3 hours for a month, and not read all of the terror, fighting, killing, mauling, oppressing verses of the Quran and Hadith. The fact is that,
you know,
once Muhammad began the Islamic era, which was begun with the Pledge of Aqaba, which was a pledge to wage war on all humankind, quote unquote, that Islam became nothing more than a declaration of war and a terrorist manifesto. And so to make the statement that the terrorists have perverted one of the world's great religions is the single most diabolical lie that can be perpetrated today. There is nothing the man could have said that would have been more destructive to life, liberty, to truth.
You know, over in Oklahoma today, we've got a policewoman that was beheaded. And she was beheaded by a guy who has been running around trying to get people to join Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine that.
Yeah.
You know, people who do what their religious book says to do, and they follow it studiously and meticulously, mm-hmm. and do exactly what their book told them to do, are being called what, other than fundamentalists? Crazies? Of course they're crazy to follow the Quran. That's not an issue.
Right.
They're out of their mind insane.
Correct.
That's what it takes to be a fundamentalist Muslim. You have to be nuts.
Stupid, by the way. Ignorant.
Totally ignorant.
Yeah, irrational. But the opposite is true. You have to pervert Islam to not be a terrorist. All good Muslims are terrorists. All good Muslims are terrorists. Muhammad was a terrorist. Muhammad said, I've become victorious with terror. Muhammad led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. If it wasn't for terror, there would be no Islam. The antithesis of what the President of the United States said is true. And everything he will say henceforth about the religion of Islam is a complete, absolute lie. We'll be back.